Hi folks, and welcome to episode 46 of the Epochs of the Lotus-Eaters. I am of course joined by Bo, and we are going to be continuing our deep dive into Napoleon Bonaparte. Last time we left off with Napoleon abandoning his army in Egypt, fleeing back to France. What happened to them all?
Not good things. Not very many of them returned.
Yeah. So we're going to find out what he did when he returned to France.
We'll get into their final downfall because the British ended up sending another army under a guy called Abercrombie. Mm-hmm. But we'll get into some of the details of that in a bit.
Okay, great.
First of all, he did get news that there was rumblings of a coup back in Paris, mm-hmm. which seems to be legit. It wasn't complete nonsense.
Yeah.
But he sort of gets rumblings of that and he sort of sees the way things going in Egypt. And he says, you know, I risk going through enemy lines in order to get back because I really had to.
But I mean, you were besieged by the British fleet in Egypt.
Mm.
That after they just destroyed your fleet and you're abandoning your army there. So, I mean, technically that's true, but there's a bit of a moral dimension there that I think is important. But anyway.
Well, it's interesting to note that when he got back to France, he was greeted as a returning hero.
Mm-hmm.
People in the streets with banners and flags screaming his name and things.
They didn't care.
Yeah, he said, oh, I beat the Mamelukes at the Battle of the Pyramids. I did some interesting things at Acre.
Why don't you have a triumphal procession for your army then, Napoleon?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I'm fond of the infantryman. And so I'm looking at Napoleon through the lens of, we've just abandoned 30,000 of them to die. You know, that seems a bit harsh. You know, whereas I guess if you're just, a Parisian, you don't care about that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a world away.
Yeah, exactly.
And he just spun it. Just lied about it, really. And if you don't know, back in the pre-modern days.
Oh, here's a hero. He's, conquered some territory for France temporarily.
You've got to sort of take their word for it. You know, there's no streaming service to find out what's really going on the ground.
Yeah, that's true.
It's one of those things. So I suppose we should cut back to France and the political situation in Paris and things. So I mentioned before that Napoleon's brother, Lucien, Napoleon's actually the second oldest boy,
mm-hmm.
and he's the oldest one, Lucien, is an important figure sort of politically in France. You know, he's part of the government there is actually quite an important figure. And so what we've had there after the fall of Robespierre and the sort of ultra hardline Jacobins and all the people that kept guillotining everyone at the drop of a hat, once they were gone, they had a new type of government that they called the Directory or the Directorate. And it was quite a weak, it was based on a parliamentary system. They had an upper and lower house, and sort of a lower legislative body type assembly, and then an upper chamber with sort of more aristocratic people. But it was quite weak. Like most parliamentary systems, relatively weak, you know, compared to a despotism, for example. And Lucien was an important player in that lower house. I mean, one of the most. Barras is still important. And so there were sort of five really important figures in that mm-hmm. directorate.
And we get the same sort of effect now. There are 650 MPs, but you can only name a handful of them.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's the same with politicians in America. There are hundreds, but you don't know who most of them are.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it, when you think I've been following politics for decades or whatever, and even now you're like, I've never seen or heard that MP ever before. They've been an MP since 2005 or whatever.
The MP from West Lothian or something. Who the hell's that? You don't know, because there are literally hundreds of them.
Yeah, if you don't write articles that get published in the mainstream media and you never pipe up in Parliament, why would anyone have ever heard of you, I suppose?
Exactly.
So I've got a quote here. I'm going to be quoting from Sir Charles Oman quite a lot because he is one of the very best on Napoleon. And he said this basically about Napoleon's return. He said, knowing the imbecility of the Directory, he, Napoleon, was now ready to pose as the saviour of France and to make a bid for supreme power, for his ambition ran far beyond that of being merely the chief of French generals. So one of the things that's been said about Napoleon, to the point of cliches, so obvious, that his ambition was unbounded.
I mean, it's obvious.
Yeah, yeah. It's also one of those things that the more he got, the closer he got to sort of realising these dreams, it fueled it more. It wasn't that it sort of satisfied him.
It's very Alexander the Greatish.
Yeah, it's never enough.
Yeah, Caesarish.
It's never enough, whatever it is.
There's obviously a certain kind of man with a certain kind of personality who Napoleon falls into the archetype of.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder, like Alexander, I wonder, it's a bit of a silly aside almost, but if he had become a conqueror of the whole world.
What then?
Yeah, would he have been satisfied with that? I wonder.
No, of course
I don't. Not. Yeah, yeah.
Of course not.
I think the answer is no. Yeah. Would have found something else.
Yeah.
It would have just found something else. So the coup is often called the coup of 18 Brumaire, which is the 9th of November in our calendar. So just briefly, this is the plan. So Lucien and his political faction in Paris were not sort of all powerful. They couldn't just start doing whatever they wanted, mm-hmm. but they were sort of important and powerful. They had a decent body of people that were behind them, that were loyal to them, but nowhere near enough just to, as I say, just start passing laws as they mm-hmm. pleased. So the idea was that they would, I think they had two of the five most important people in the directorate on side. So the idea was that on this one particular day, or 18 Brumaire, they would arrest the other three, and then, like, illegally.
Yeah.
And then use the remaining people to just push through a new constitution, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to start again entirely, to do away with this government of the directorate, pretty much entirely. And their plan was that they would replace it with a triumvirate, the power of three men, mm-hmm. of which Napoleon Bonaparte will be one.
Yeah.
So that was their idea. And don't want to spend too much time on it, but it works, but it doesn't go to plan, if you know what I mean.
Right. Okay.
So, of course, if it had all gone to plan, there would have been no problem and everything would have been resolved by lunchtime.
Yeah.
But it doesn't quite go to plan. They don't get all the people they wanted. And it's left up to Lucien to do a lot of politicking on the floor of the assembly that day
right.
to try and convince people and things. To cut that one down, eventually Napoleon, who's outside with a company of men, loses patience, or he thinks the moment's been lost. So he goes into the assembly with a handful of men
mm-hmm.
armed with bayonets and everything. And as soon as he enters the assembly, they all go mad. They'll go, arrest him. What the hell is the general doing in here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you can't be in here.
Which is a great question.
And it's true, by law, you're not allowed men in there. Armed, it's just not allowed. Napoleon's not allowed.
Sensibly so.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't want, then that's not the appropriate place for soldiers because it implies military dictatorship.
Yeah, it's like in Britain, you're not allowed soldiers in the House of Commons, obviously. The monarch isn't allowed in there.
Mm.
I don't think lords are allowed in there.
No.
So it's quite strict. The whole point of it is that they're not allowed in there.
I had a tour around recently, well, not recently, before COVID, right. And they've got different colour carpets and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, it's all green in the Commons. It's all red in the Lords, isn't it? Yeah.
You're not allowed to walk on the wrong colour carpet.
Yeah. it's all symbolic, but like Black Rod knocking on the door of the Commons.
Yep.
May we come in?
Nope.
So when Napoleon and his armed men enter the legislative chamber, they go mad, like they're screaming and shouting. They're not, and because his idea was to go in there and try to reason with them. But he wasn't heard. He wasn't remotely heard.
Well, I'm not surprised you're walking with a bunch of armed men. Hey, I'm here to reason. How are you?
And he's the guy that fired on the Parisian mob a few years earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
They know he's...
The whiff of grape shot.
Yeah, yeah. They know he's... he will stop at nothing.
Yeah, he's a lunatic.
when he needs to, yeah. And so Napoleon is physically sort of forced out of that chamber because he's not prepared to just start murdering them all.
Not yet.
Not at that point. So he's actually forced out of the chamber. So it's actually sort of a defeat.
Mm.
That's a defeat, isn't it? A type of defeat.
Yeah, I'd say so. He didn't get what he wanted.
He's sort of aghast by it. He can't quite believe this planned coup is just not going right.
Yeah.
It's all going wrong.
Yeah.
So he decides what he'll do is just go across the way a bit. It's in the same building to the upper body, the upper house, and try and talk to them, try and... reason with them. And so he goes in there and they're even more aggressive to him. In fact, one of the anecdotes is that someone strikes him in the face and draws a bit of blood on his cheek or something. Others say that didn't happen, but he was forced out of there even quicker.
Right, okay.
Like,
I love the high dramatics of all this.
Yeah, it's very dramatic, isn't it? Yeah. Considering it's quite bloodless. And so in the end, some of Napoleon's own men sort of start losing confidence. They're saying, wait, what is Napoleon doing here? Wait, what's going on now? What are we doing?
What are we party to here?
Yeah. And so Lucien comes out. Napoleon's outside again with his men. Lucien Bonaparte comes out, draws his sword.
Hmm.
There's slight variations on exactly how this went, but the main one is that he draws his sword and puts the point of the sword to Napoleon's chest. And he said, men, if I thought for a split second that my brother was aiming to be a despotic tyrant, I'd run him through myself this very moment. Yeah, it's all nonsense, it's all lies, it's all just the, political fiction.
The hubris, the gall of it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'll never happen.
Yeah. And but apparently that kind of works. The men are like, oh, okay, all right.
Good point.
So, yeah. And the other thing to mention, I suppose, in a much, much broader sweep of things, is that France was looking for a single man to lead them. They'd had 10, 11 odd years of craziness.
Democratic government.
Yeah, since the days of 89. It's now the year 1800. Mm-hmm. So they've had 10, 11 years of craziness, murderousness, and then just weak government after that. Mm. And they just wanted an end to weakness and division. So if that meant sort of a strong leader, well, at first, we're getting slightly ahead of ourselves. At first, they wanted this triumvirate, these three consuls. Mm. But Lucien Bonaparte and Napoleon Bonaparte sort of word it just so that Napoleon is the first of the three consuls.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So for a long time, for a few years, for like 4 years odd, his title is the first consul.
Hmm.
That's his title. But within weeks, merely weeks of that happening, the other two are essentially more or less out of the picture.
Hmm.
And he is first consul, but king in all but name.
I'm surprised his brother's just okay with this. Like, it's his younger brother doing this. You think the elder brother would be like, well...
Oh, right. I see what you mean. Yeah. It's an interesting thing. We said this before, like in Henry V, did we? That quite often brothers murder each other at the drop of a hat and things. But sometimes they work in absolute unison. They've decided the eldest brother, like Hannibal, like the Lion's Brood, or like Henry V, he had many younger brothers.
Yeah.
The Bonapartes seem to have been absolutely loyal to Napoleon for whatever reason. Well, I suppose he's got the military power, which is the ultimate thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean... If he really wanted to, Napoleon could have Lucien imprisoned. If he didn't, there's no reason to ever do that. But if he wanted to, I suppose he could. But yeah, you're quite right. Why wasn't Lucien more ambitious?
Napoleon must have had a very powerful personality, which, I mean, obviously he does. But he must have been very, very difficult to deal with.
Yeah. You just don't cross him.
No.
You just don't do it. Even Lucien.
Yeah.
I wonder if they were sort of ever physically fought. I suppose they did as brothers.
They must have.
As boys.
Yeah.
Who knows? But
anyway.
Charles Oman says this about the consulship. He says, quote, "With small difficulty, Bonaparte dethroned the directory and dispersed by force of arms the Council of 500, which is sort of that lower body. Yeah, in fact, at the end of that day, towards the very end of the day, he does march men back in there, knowing that the whole picture has changed. And they just start physically jumping out of the window and things.
Defenstrating themselves.
Yeah, they just, they're like, oh, well, yeah, he's planning to do this. So,
I mean, he has turned up with a body of men. He is bursting in inappropriately. Come on.
Mm. Yeah, with fixed bayonets and everything. Yeah.
I mean, this guy's a maniac.
It dispersed with force of arms the Council of 500, which represented parliamentary government. He then instituted a new form of constitution, which was in reality, though not in shape, a military despotism. Under the title of First Consul, he became the supreme ruler of France. So I've heard people say, in all but name, he's a king because it's for life.
Yeah.
Well, then, so right there.
He's a king, yeah.
And his powers are essentially, there's no limit to them. His word is almost law. Not exactly, not quite yet, but very nearly that. Mm. So it is a king.
Looking at the trajectory that we're on, that's where he's definitely ending up.
Yeah. This is a quote from Napoleon himself about this time. He's supposed to have said, quote, what I have done up to now is nothing. I am only at the beginning of the course I am to run. I can no longer obey. I have tasted command and I cannot give it up. End quote.
I believe it.
It's also that thing of the old adage of grabbing a tiger by the ears or a bull by the horns.
Mm.
You can't really let it go.
Yeah.
You just can't. It's
I mean, what's Napoleon's options at this point?
Yeah.
I mean, he probably would have been fine if he'd just been normal after coming back from Egypt. But like after bursting in with a bunch of armed men, you're going to get in trouble for this. So
yeah,
you're in trouble already. You may as well see it through to the end now.
One of the things I would say is that people sometimes forget, well, it's not really stressed much if you just watch a sort of 1 hour documentary or read just a small book on it. People tried to assassinate Napoleon a few times.
Yeah.
People tried to assassinate Queen Victoria a number of times.
Really?
I can believe that, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, anarchists and things.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
A number of people. Yeah. So Napoleon, all through his entire reign, had his enemies, for sure, like internally, deadly enemies, you know.
But it only makes perfect sense because literally Napoleon's reign is justified by force.
Yeah.
I'm the guy with the army.
Yeah.
You know, there's no legitimacy. He's not calling upon an ancient heritage or, you know, rational election or something like that. He's just saying, well, I've got the guns.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Come at me, bro.
Exactly. And so that's that. No wonder people are like, okay, I'll try, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, at various points, he basically says, come at me, bro, to various nations across Europe, essentially.
Yeah.
You're like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
One line here from Oman, which mirrors what I've sort of already said, quote, the nation, France, acquiesced in this change because Bonaparte had pledged himself to save France from the coalition, the directory, the foreign coalitions of sort of paid for by England, that he would save France from the coalition if he was entrusted with a dictatorship. He kept his word, which is true.
Until the end.
But so we're talking about, we're in the year sort of 1800 now. And he has, you know, it was only about a year and a half ago where he was merely a brigadier general.
Mm.
Now he's absolutely undisputedly the most powerful man in France, among the most powerful men in Europe, in the world.
Mm. Mm.
So where his career from Toulon almost went vertically up, it's just kept going.
Yeah.
If anything, it's purely vertical now.
Yeah. Right.
Going straight up, you know. So, and in the next year or two, it keeps going, you know. It's like, he reaches, well, kind of the zenith of his power by 1804, 1805, you can argue.
Yeah.
But so for this sort of 7-8 years or so of his life, he just can't stop winning. I mean, he's had reverses out in Egypt and a couple of bits and bobs here and there, but in the broadest sense, his career just keeps going from strength to strength.
But he's clever enough to parlay Egypt into a win.
Yeah, even that.
You know.
He could spin it, and even that, it's not a complete defeat. And on the day of 18 Brumaire, it could all have gone terribly wrong.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.